Welcome to Roots, Runners, Rhizomes, Radical Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner.
And I'm Lauren Jambroni.
Hey, everybody. Today we're here with Scott Thomas. Scott is the director of Columbia Reentry. Some of you folks may know him from that role. His primary professional focus is social service work and public health. But for over 20 years, he has also worked independently doing hypnosis, focusing on behavior change work. And he also has a 30-year meditation practice and a bunch of other interesting interests in different modalities that we'll be talking with him today about. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for being here.
Sure.
So, Scott, well, I guess, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came to live in, you live in Ghent?
I live in Ghent.
How long have you been living in Ghent?
It will be 1 year ago last week. Oh. Was our anniversary.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so where are you from? How'd you get here?
Let's see. We got here via New Jersey. We had three chickens in the backyard that kept asking for more space every single morning. And I had been coming up to Dutchess County for about 20 years. And when it was time to sort of make the move, we decided to jump up an extra county and go to Columbia County. And it was pretty easy to fall in love with the whole area. And the chickens were happy, and my wife got to expand from, I think it was two or three vegetable beds to, I think she now has 11. So we are after space and just enjoy the county.
Excellent. And where were you before you came?
Let's see, from Jersey, you know, well, let's see, my wife and I are always having this contest on who has moved to the most places. She says she's 37, I'm 36 places. So we both, so it would be difficult to run through the whole number, but
yes.
I am East Coast. I grew up in New England, went to high school and college in Jersey, and then went, I was, in the city, New York City, for a couple of years, went on a two-week vacation to San Francisco and stayed for 20 years in the San Francisco Bay Area. So a lot of my life and my practices and how I approach things is probably influenced by 20 years in the Bay Area.
Wow.
Awesome. And is the Bay Area where you first came into contact with hypnosis?
Well, everyone does. I mean, that's kind of the joke there, which is it's just in the culture. It's in the air. People are either involved in, I think the person I was living with at the time, she became acupressurist. You know, my best friend was an acupuncturist. Other people are doing massage. It's, you know, it's part of what you do. I became interested in hypnosis because my original dissertation research I was doing at Berkeley wasn't working out, and I quickly had to come up with a new topic, and I said, well, why not do something on hypnosis? So what I did was go out, got trained on hypnosis, and then I kind of shifted it a little to how to train folks on self-hypnosis and automatic writing. So I kind of came into hypnosis because, like I say, there it's kind of everywhere, and then I needed a topic to focus on.
And what kind of hypnosis was that that you studied? And can you talk, tell folks a little bit sort of what hypnosis is? There's clinical hypnosis, I know, and I've met and experienced that myself, even had it applied in a semi-medical way. Is that the type of hypnosis that...
I definitely did. I mean, I did what would be more considered traditional trance-based hypnosis. There is also NLP, you know, neuro-linguistic program, and Ericksonian hypnosis and other styles of hypnosis. But mine was pretty traditional of you got someone with you and you're kind of relaxing them into a relaxed trance state, and then you're working with them. And I do two types of things, which is I either focus on behavior change that they're interested in doing and what might be called imagery rehearsal, or it's just good old journeying, which is you have a question, you have a topic, and you kind of push off into the imaginary realm, as it were, and you start to see what comes up, and you're working with your client right then with feelings and thoughts and images that are coming up, and having that begin to inform sort of what they're looking for. So you've two. You've a very practical behavior change side, and then you have what might be called a investigative inquiry journeying side.
Mm-hmm. And what was your first experience of or with hypnosis that, you know, led you to think about it when you needed a different dissertation topic? What was your first initial experience of it?
It was just really jumping right in, which is I had to make the shift rather quickly because I need to get out of graduate school after a number of years, let's say. And so what I did was just, again, it was very easy there to say, okay, I want to go become a hypnotherapist. And I went to a school. It's a very well-known school over in Marin County, and just joined in their certification program. So my first experience with it actually was when I joined the school. It wasn't like I had been doing it for a while and then said that. But also I had had a meditation and worked with, let's say, altered states for a number of years. I'm forgetting the name of, what's the thing where you put yourself in a box, you float on salt water.
Oh, isolation tank.
Thanks, yeah. Isolation tank work, you know, the John Lilly type stuff. And just, you know, fasting and going out into the woods for a long period of time until you're kind of lost in your own head or somewhere. So I was familiar, let's say, with trance work and altered, but this was once I went into training is when I first became familiar with.
Can you compare the training of a hypnotherapist to some of the more traditional trance state inducing practices? I myself also have kind of a dual background in, you know, shamanic practice and mystical states, which are often coming from an indigenous culture or a more apprentice kind of personal style. But then there's a certification process for hypnotherapy. What was that like? Is it more systematic? Can you compare a little bit between your experience with
most
those?
I would say, I mean, ours was very stepwise and systematic and, you know, a practice and, you know, just like any school, as it were. Going off, having homework, having a number of sessions you're supposed to practice, you know, between week by week, taking notes, following it. I mean, if it's a good school, they're teaching you how to work with people even more than the hypnosis stuff. The hypnosis stuff is very quick and easy to learn. It does not take much. And so if it's a good school, it's focusing more on how you're paying attention to your clients, how you're listening really well to how they're doing and stuff like that. Hypnosis, you know, I mean, you could teach someone how to put someone else into a trance in probably a half hour. It's, you know, it's, to tell you the truth, I describe it a lot like massage. I mean, what you're really doing is you're just having someone end up in a relaxed, internally focused state. So that doesn't take much. What takes much is, like I say, becoming attentive to what's going on with them once they're in a trance state. But once they're in a trance state, you know, even that, it's popping out of one is pretty straightforward. So I would actually say it's, I mean, unless it's, you're really pushing it, it's much less altered than shamanic journeying or, you know, a deep meditative state. It's much more surface.
The kind of movie, old Hollywood movie image of hypnosis and mesmerism sometimes is where people are basically coerced into often, you know, making a fool of themselves on stage in front of people. Yeah. You can't really do that with hypnosis, or can you?
Well, not if they don't want to. I mean, how I always describe it, it's pretty straightforward. If people could do that, then, you know, robbers would go pick up some people and hypnotize them, say, go rob that bank, come back with the money.
Right.
We don't have any stories of that. So the people who are quacking like ducks on a stage, two things are happening. One is stage hypnotists are really good at what they do. They are not faking it. They are, they're reading cues in the audience really well. They're saying things and watching people just move their bodies in certain ways or nod their heads in certain ways. So stage hypnotists are excellent at what they do. And then they pick the right people to bring up on stage who then they do put them into altered states who then do stuff and everything. So at one level, that's all real. But the level of people overriding who they are, we just don't, you know, we'd hear way more stories of people doing odd things that they didn't think they were going to do.
What are some really positive behavioral shifts and things that can come about?
Well, you know, it's funny. We keep calling it hypnosis, but it's, you know, I would say, I don't know what percent of Olympians use it now, but, mm-hmm. you know, most, many Olympians use what's called imagery rehearsal, which is pretty much the same thing. I mm-hmm. mean, hypnosis tends to work more on doing a relaxation process of dropping yourself deeper and deeper and getting into kind of a different state and then doing imagery rehearsal. But whenever the Olympics on, if you listen to them interviewing and stuff, I mean, sometimes they're even on the edge of the diving board and they're running through one time after another. How am I doing this dive? Where am I grabbing my knees? Make sure I expand here. So imagery rehearsal is probably the key to a lot of the behavior change stuff. So I've done mm-hmm. a lot of work with musicians and theater people. And sometimes I can think of this one musician who, once she was in performance, did a great time. But whenever she auditioned, she just would freeze up. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty straightforward process of going through that, you know, okay, I'm at the audition, I'm doing this, and here's my body's tightening. How do I, you know, let that, you know, now relax that? And the reality is the amount of imagery rehearsal you have to do is a lot. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, hypnosis definitely doesn't, someone doesn't come in and say, okay, now hypnotize me. Okay, now that's over. You have to go do the work. It's no different than, you know, like meditation. You have to go do the work. You know, you want to change how you're doing some practice. You have to go do the work. And so hypnosis is just a different way. Now, does it add something? Absolutely. I've seen, you know, a lot of times people are stuck and they add in what I'm going to call is relaxed imagery rehearsal. I mean, that's mm-hmm. almost a better term in some ways than hypnosis, because hypnosis does connotate, you know, the whole idea of stage hypnosis and someone walking in a trance or something. But, you know, there was a bunch of sports psychologists who changed the term to, I think it was VMBR, which was visual motor behavioral response, because that sounds so perfect and scientific. In reality, what it was, you know, a version of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Self-hypnosis of going in, you relax, what are you seeing? What's your motor response? And then do it and do it and do it.
So when you've worked with individuals mm-hmm. as a hypnosis therapist, you run them through a script, but then you're teaching them how to do that on their own so they're not dependent on you? Or do you have people come repeatedly to you?
Everything. Some mm-hmm. people, it's just like, you know, I'm going to keep going to massage because it's similar to it, which mm-hmm. is sometimes people want to come in and, to tell you the truth, they want to just be there and mm-hmm. here, let's have you do it. Now, it's funny that you say a script. A lot of times of what I will do is I'll sit there, I'll talk to someone for like 20 minutes, even a half hour, mm-hmm. and they'll tell me all sorts of things that they know, and they already want things to be a certain way, and I'll put them into trance and then repeat it back. Now, why would that work? The reason it would work is, let's say, you know, we want to be doing something a certain way, but our brain is running nonstop and it's kind of fixed in the way it is. Well, once they go into trance, it's almost like you've softened the clay. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like you're taking what they already know, you've softened the clay, and you're putting it back in. And so it's sort of like it slips in deeper. And people will tell me this. People will tell me that, you know, oh, it was just so funny. It was like a few days later, you know, and I had this, because I've worked with a lot of smokers and stuff, you know, I first thought I want a cigarette, and then I was like, well, I kind of really don't, you know. So it was actually their own thoughts and ideas mm-hmm. that were just kind of, you know, pushed in a little deeper. But other people, you know, they do 2-3 sessions and they want to learn how to do this. And teaching self-hypnosis doesn't take long at all either. I mean, that's a one session thing to teach someone how to do it. But it's like almost everything else, or many things in life, let's say, which is you learn how to do it, but then it's in the doing of it. Mm-hmm. So we all know it's, you know, it's healthy to exercise. Is it complicated to exercise? No, you either push a weight or you walk faster. But how often do we do it? So mm-hmm. self-hypnosis, the magic isn't in, there's some magic in the hypnosis. The real magic is in how often are you doing it? How clearly are you doing it? You know, how conscientiously are you doing it? Mm-hmm. So some people do it that way. But other people are coming just to go investigate. Like, you know, it's important to keep the sort of journey, insight, imaginal realm alive in it, which is I've had people who come in, they say, oh, I want to do this practical thing. They go inside and all of a sudden this whole world is unraveling for them in terms of what they're seeing, where they are, for lack of a better word, let's say, which dimension are they on? Mm-hmm. They're all of a sudden traveling, mm-hmm. as it were. Mm-hmm. And so for them, they're coming back because, you know, similar to maybe, you know, shamanic journeying and stuff without the annoying drums, if you ask me, but without, you know, it's sort of like, oh, let's journey. It's nice and quiet. And so that's, you know, what they come back for is, you know, that was a very, you know, rich experience, and it felt nice to be connected to such a rich, vivid other realm. Can we go back to that realm? And that starts to inform how a person operates in the world. So then you're kind of going at, let's say, larger life existential issues in terms mm-hmm. of who am I, what do I want to be? And that slips more into the depth psychology side, as it were, as opposed to the behavior change side.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners who maybe are unfamiliar with shamanic journeying, core shamanism, and some of these techniques, could you maybe unpack a little bit more what it might look and sound like for a person journeying via hypnosis?
Sure. Well, with shamanic journeying, the idea usually is that there oftentimes are drums. You're being, shifted into another state of consciousness where the idea is that you are journeying either to a lower realm or the middle realm or the higher realm, and that when you're there, you are coming into contact with, other entities, other worlds, other things. So it's a way, to be fair to what, you know, shamanic journeying is, it's a way to enter into different realms, investigate those realms, and come back and maybe bring back some insights or some understanding or some different way of operating. Shamanism is oftentimes, I would say, describe more that shamans are more like lawyers working with the other realms or something as less of a it has a spiritual aspect, but it's basically to go someplace, get some information and some ways to work, and then come back here. Hypnosis one, you're going to wander into all sorts of things from, you know, let's say you will experience it possibly as a past life to, something currently, but people almost, it's like a dream state and everything. So I would say for my experience, they're similar in that there's a journeying, dreamlike aspect, but one, yeah. So let me leave it there.
Okay. Are there any cautions around taking these kinds of journeys? Is there?
Well, let me stick with the hypnosis one, which is, yeah, I would say if anyone's ever going to work with a hypnotherapist, make sure you're working with someone who you feel confident in and you feel comfortable with, you like, feels sober and sane. And the reason I say that is once you're in a trance, there's no danger like being stuck in a trance or anything, but you want to be working with someone who doesn't stir things up, as it were, and then say, okay, session's over, see you, and send you out in the street. So you definitely want someone who is good at working with clients. So I think there is some concern sometimes around someone who hasn't been trained in a, let's say, client-based modality,
mm-hmm.
Who just becomes a hypnotherapist because they think it's interesting, starts working with people, as opposed to someone who has, you know, 5-10 years of counseling, or is a social worker, or is a massage therapist, or someone who knows what it means to work with a client, feel what's going on, watch what's going on, and can pace the work in a certain way. So that would be more my concern, is the skills and ability of the person, as opposed to, a trance. Yeah, that's less of the concern than who's doing, who's there with you while you're doing it.
Right.
And What is that like for you, holding the space for a client? What are some of the things that you have to be aware of or that you take into consideration?
I like it because I usually, you know, the best way is, you know, you kind of naturally shift with them. You can't get too disconnected and be dry. You have to be feeling where they're going and what they're doing. And so you get slightly altered yourself, I would say. And that's the way, because then you're both kind of journeying together, as it were. So you have kind of a split going on yourself. At the same time, you have to be watching. And again, like I, you know, to repeat, it's sort of just pacing and seeing how they're responding to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what does it look like after?
Usually a smiley face. that's what usually happens with trance. Actually, two things, which is, so, boy, that seemed quick. I'm like, that was 40 minutes. And they're like, no, that was like 5:10. So there's definitely a time alteration, which is always a very good way to judge, you know, if something was going on. But also there's a lot, not all the time, but a lot of times I'd say there was a cleansing. Even though you're doing hypnosis work and everything, people seem to come back with a little cleaner mind and body.
Mm-hmm.
And that almost happens naturally. Even if you haven't been doing, like, you know, depth work or insight work or anything, some of the garbage that we tend to carry inside gets washed out on a natural way. How that happens, I'm not sure, but it's nice to see. People tend to come back with a nice little gleam.
Mm.
Could you unpack that a little more? You mean like kind of residue from trauma or just psychological discomfort? Is that what's being released? Or
I think so. It's I'm thinking of the automatic writing work that I do, and that also I've taught many clients, which is when I did you know, the research work with automatic writing, which was part of why I had to shift to for my dissertation, is that I did what's called a thematic analysis of what people were experiencing, and came up with seven different themes kept appearing over and over again when you interviewed the folks. And one of them was catharsis, which is that there is just a release, and it's not even that they were going in search of it. It's when you're automatic writing. So what? Wait, let me back up a little and define automatic writing. Automatic writing in the old spiritualist tradition was people were very kind of unconscious, and their hand was just moving and writing words and sentences and stuff. And if you think of, you know, W.B. Yeats and his wife and their automatic writing, that was of that sort of the modern, at least the version I was doing. Yeah, it might be closer to what people think of as free writing and such, but it's a little structured around seeing what happens when you don't censor anything you're writing. Probably closer to Freudian free association.
Mm-hmm.
And that uncensored, as you keep feeding the sense of being uncensored as you're writing, it's actually even less trance-related than it's meditative mind-related, in that, okay, and I'm writing that, I don't care what it says, I'm writing that, I don't care what it says. And that's where some of the stuff starts to get released. And it's not even that you need to have an insight, even though many people have pretty good insights when they're doing automatic writing, but just things like, that's awful. And then you're writing the words and you're even saying, that's crappy, crappy, crappy. I wish I had crappy, crappy, crappy. And then you keep writing and you're farther down the line. And when you're over, you know, the idea is sort of stir and release, I guess, something like that. So yes, that's what it would be. And, but we're very good. I would say most of us are very good at judging how much we should do. So most people I know who I've trained in automatic writing myself, I still do it, is, you know, you seldom go too far.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let me leave it right there.
So you have an automatic writing practice.
Mm-hmm.
What other kinds of hypnosis-based practices do you have in your life, and what applications
Yeah, well, the other would be self-hypnosis, which I don't do as frequency. Both the, I would consider, the meditation practice my daily practice, whereas automatic writing and self-hypnosis I dive into sort of when I need it. I can feel really, disconnected sometimes and wanting either maybe more meaning or why am I doing this? And automatic writing is very good for that. It definitely helps connect me, let's say, with larger spheres of why do anything. answers sometimes existential and spiritual dilemmas, as it were. So I might not do automatic for months and months. And then I go through a phase where I'm doing it and I'm feeding myself with that. And it's like working with a good teacher, you might think, where all of a sudden you're seeing a teacher on a regular basis and it's like helping either ground you or open your head, back up a little more or get you out of a rut. So if I was to think of what I do, practice wise, it's sort of like I keep a base of daily meditation and then every few months dive into automatic writing and then probably less frequency, but if I get really stuck around, I'm not getting something done, I might, do sort of good old self-hypnosis behavior change where I go in and do imagery rehearsal around, here's what I want to be doing, here's what I want to be doing. And it's just that conflict you can have sometimes, which is, wait, I know I want to be doing this. I have the desire, the interest. How come I'm not doing it? And there's something in the way, and you can dive in and do some insight work, which, again, for me would be more automatic writing. But you can also just say, forget about the reason. I'm just going to practice it till it becomes a reality.
And how long a session is the average kind of self-hypnosis session that a person might do? What's recommended?
Oh, goodness. You could do it in 5-10 minutes to an hour. Same thing with automatic writing. It depends on, there are some, let's say, schools that might teach automatic writing styles that might have you do it in a very formal, quiet room. You have candles, you might have music, and you sit down, and I'm doing this. The style I use and I teach, you could, be sitting on a bus or a train or anywhere, and then all of a sudden say, I'm going to write for a while, and you can write automatically, and you might do it. I do as short as a 3 or 4 minute spurt to just kind of, something's not moving, and I want it to move, or I have a really good sort of chair for sitting informally, sitting and saying, I'm going to sit here, and I'm not getting up for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and I'm just going to keep writing. If I pause for a while, I pause, and then I kind of, I don't want to say force the automatic writing, but I don't let myself off the hook. I say, you're going to write, and then if you pause for a while, that's fine, then you're going to write some more. So I guess what I'm trying to say is you can get benefit from, I think once you're skilled at it, and you've been, you can do it anytime, any place, and you can do it for 30 minutes in a snap, then you can do it for 3 minutes or an hour. I mean, I've had, clients who, they would only do hour-long sessions because that's what they wanted.
And with the automatic writing and with the hypnosis, is there a way that you follow up with your clients so that you see any of the behavior changes that they're looking for or intending upon come into their life? Or how does that work?
Yeah, if it's a hypnosis client, a lot of times it's multiple sessions. I don't like turning it into, let's say, long-term therapy because, first of all, technically it's not therapy. It's hypnosis-based behavior changes, I think the safe word for it. But, I definitely would do a number of sessions enough to see that something's changing, that they can see the change and they're getting handle on it. But if you're not seeing the changes they're looking for, then it's not working, actually, and I've seen that happen. If that's not happening, then I would also suggest they look at other modalities, other ways of working and everything. I had a woman, I remember she came to me like, I was working in the village at the time on Sullivan Street, and she came for smoking, and she would come, get into a great trance, go really deep. We'd have a wonderful session, and she would walk outside, I'd lean out the window, look, and she'd light a cigarette. She must have done that for, 7-8 sessions in a row. And after a while, I said, you know, I like the money, but sorry, yeah, this, right. you know, it doesn't feel ethically, you know, that this is the way it should go. You should, and you know, I encouraged her to try, you know, this, that, or the other. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you work in that, I mean, what's fun about the area of behavior change is it's either happening or it's not. So, mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm a big fan of depth psychology. I'm a big fan of really just even therapy, you know, existential therapy, which is why am I doing this and what is my life about? I don't think everything should be behavior focused. But if you are going to be behavior focused, you got to see some change. Mm-hmm. So usually for those type of clients, I would. But for a lot of the people where I used to do automatic writing workshops and self-hypnosis workshops, I might, you know, hear later on how it went on. But those are more like a training or an educational thing where mm-hmm. someone might go and, you know, do a three-hour workshop learning how to do anything else. You know, here's, right. let's have a running workshop just to see what your stride is like or something like that. Mm-hmm. So for those folks, I might not see the follow-up because, again, I used to do a lot of self-hypnosis training. You get 10 people and, you know, it's a couple hours and you know, they all get the hang of it. And by the end, everyone's like, okay. And they want to go off. That's why they came to that type of setup.
Sure. Are you planning on doing any of those in the area anytime?
You know, I hadn't originally, but Hudson and the county is such a fun place that I've thought more of it now that I've been up here. It definitely wasn't how I thought of coming up here. But, you know, I live in Ghent, so I'm between Chatham, which is a really fun town, and Hudson. And, you know, just getting to know a lot of people and everything. So, yes, is the short of it, is mm-hmm. I've definitely considered probably the more immediate one would be people really like the automatic writing stuff. But self-hypnosis is very, you know, I think there are a lot of people who are very practical and skilled at things, and then they want to just make a little adjustment in their lives. And self-hypnosis is, again, you know, the term hypnosis is, I think it's good to use self-hypnosis, but, you know, the other one is, like I say, I think I was using earlier, relaxed imagery rehearsal. Mm-hmm. How do I do this? How do I do this? And you have, you know, every, you know, performer, stage performer is doing that in some way. Okay, where am I hitting? You know, how do I hit my mark? How do I come up here? Wait, why am I crouched over? How do I lift myself? So it is stuff that all of us almost naturally do, and this is just formalizing that process.
Mm. Can you, I don't know if it's possible, can you describe a little more how it might sound or feel to a person being led through self-hypnosis? I've personally been led through hypnosis, mm-hmm. so things are coming to my mind from those sessions, but I don't know if, I'm sure many of our listeners have not had that experience yet, without causing anyone, you might be operating heavy machinery who's listening right now, you know, but just to kind of give a flavor, not obviously not actually leading us into.
Well, I think what you're bringing up though is what is sort of the felt experience of
it, which the somatic felt experience.
Yeah. And that's it. But that, and I'm happy to bring that up because, hypnosis is very body based, which is the last thing you want to try and do is relax your mind because your mind will usually win. and how I teach most people, how I put most people into trance and how in self-hypnosis is it's a physical process, you know, where you feel your muscles relaxing, where you're counting down, where you hook onto your exhales. And so your body, you know, you're working on the sort of the physiology more than your mind. The mm-hmm. mind will catch up with that one. That's why I do relate to massage so much, which is, you know, if you're getting a good massage, you're falling into a trance state. You know, you're losing a little sense of time, your mind's relaxing, you're jabbering inside your head a little less. Well, the masseuse isn't, you know, telling you anything, isn't saying, relax, stop thinking. No, seriously, stop thinking. You know, there isn't that process. What's happening is you're feeling, you know, my shoulders are finally relaxing. Oh, that feels good. Oh, that's relaxing there. So I teach, and again, you know, let's keep in mind there are a number of different hypnosis methods. Ericksonian is very different than that and exceedingly effective. I just come from the sort of body-based, as it were. Mm-hmm. So teaching someone how to do it is no different than teaching people how to do a body scan find muscles, relax tense places, drop deeper down, follow their exhales. And then all of a sudden, you're there. Your brain follows your body as your body has relaxed. Mm-hmm. Is at least, you know, the approach I use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to saying, you know, now have your mind do this and have your, you know. So, very body-based.
Mm-hmm. Are there other practices that you do that you feel are harmonious with or sympathetic to self-hypnosis that you feel are particularly fruitful? You have a sitting meditation practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do the other two. I do. I have a pretty regular Qigong practice too. Qigong for how to describe it? It's an energy-based Chinese energy practice is the best way to say it, which is it's just finding, you know, here's my energy body. Now, what do I want to do with it? Do I want to slow it down? Do I want to expand it? Do I want to move it around? So for me, that works with the self-hypnosis a lot because you're working with your energy body. So you can find out, okay, where am I? How tense am I? And now I go and let myself get a lot more watery and then heavier and then heavier and heavier. And so that works a lot with self-hypnosis. But meditation and hypnosis, how I describe the difference is meditation works on the hardware and hypnosis works on the software. Hmm. And what I mean by that is meditation really helps change how you process information, which is, you know, a lot of times what happens and why I approached meditation stuff is you get locked in your head, you get locked in narratives, you get locked in loops. God, I'm still thinking this. It's 2 hours later. You know, wasn't that annoying? Why am I going over and over this thing? And your brain basically takes over your life.
Mm-hmm.
And what meditation does is it, for me, it helps change how my brain processes so that if things start to come in, they don't get, I'm going to say the word reify because that's one I use, but what I mean by that is your brain stops concretizing things or feeding it. You know, the mm-hmm. Analogy used a lot in meditation practices is you stop throwing logs on the fire. And that's why as much as the hypnosis and the self-hypnosis is all very nice and stuff, but you know, the one I choose for a daily practice is meditation because it just stops me from feeling I'm being taken over by thought forms. I have no idea where they're coming from, narratives that are probably out of my childhood, you know, things that are based on TV. And you know, your mind just gets taken over with what I would, you know, viruses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is sort of an antidote to that where all of a sudden things, it changes, let's say, the Velcro of the mind into something that's just a little smoother or more flowing. And when that happens, you get to look around a lot more. When I find if I've been getting, you know, let's say the world has been getting Velcroed and I'm stuck on things and stuck on that, then I no longer see, like right now, where we live in Ghent, we have, without exaggeration, about between 500 and maybe 600 swallows every single night.
Oh, wow.
They're just flying all over. They're great. We have so few mosquitoes. Mosquitoes can't last. But the thing is, if your mind is just, you know, clutched in a narrative or doing this, you kind of look up and say, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, but if, you know, your mind is not doing that nonstop other narrative, that nonstop grabbing and grasping as it's oftentimes talked about, then you can look up and say, whoa, and stay with it. You know, which is so weird because it's an amazing thing, but sometimes our minds have taken over so much that you see something amazing, then you move on to, but I'm not sure where that was supposed to go. What was I doing with that? I was supposed to, you know, get caught up with that. So that's what I mean by the hardware. Meditation for me has been very good at just changing the hardware of the mind, whereas, you know, hypnosis is much more on the software, which is here's how I'm behaving. I'd like to behave differently. How about if I slip this program in place and that will help me change that? And they're both very useful. I mean, I know meditation masters that, and many of anyone who has worked with a meditation teacher know that they can get completely lost in lousy behavior and not be able to change their behavior, or not think that they are required to change their behavior. So these are two different ways of operating, and it's hard for one to substitute for the other.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's how I'd put it, which is one is how is your mind operating on a daily basis, and the other one is like, okay, I'm kind of been walking down this path. How can I shift direction here?
Mm-hmm. I would also like to put in a word for meditation. You know, a lot of people approach it as something that's very interesting and basically optional, kind of a lifestyle enhancement practice. But, you know, there's a lot of suffering created by the mind, and there's a lot of suffering that can really be relieved through a daily meditation practice, and especially folks who live with mental illness. Mm-hmm. I would guide and caution to work with a very skilled teacher in that case. But, you know, a lot of really serious, intense suffering can be relieved, too. It is a life. Meditation does make your life richer and more beautiful, helps you relate to other people and yourself. But also, you know, let's not underestimate its power to address some things that maybe other Western medicine or a medical industrial complex would medicate or incarcerate cases, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think what I might add to that is as long as the balance is kept, that it doesn't become another task.
Yes.
The danger, which I've seen in myself sometimes and in other people, is, oh, okay, now I'm supposed to meditate because meditation's good for me too. And so it becomes part of that list of things you're supposed to get done.
Mm.
Whereas I
hear that.
I think I would almost start with what is pleasurable for doing meditation.
Yeah.
How do you find pleasure in meditation? It's sweetness, it's sensuousness, and a lot of people I know, after years, they lose that, and it becomes, it becomes a practice. I spent a good number of years in Zen, and still my one formal teacher, you know, he won't even hear the word practice. He can't stand the word practice because he thinks people do turn it into a practice. So even though I'm using the term practice, it's a dangerous thing, and I think it's good to go through phases of being very practical, sharpening your practice and things like that. But if the joy and the heart aren't there, then your practice starts to dry up, and then you become a dry meditation person. And dry meditation people I think it's rather just to be messed up in the head and lead a wild, crazy life than be a dry meditator, because that's sucking all the real juice out of life. So that's the only thing I'd caution with the meditation, which is, it's for me, outside of love, friendship, family, and friends, you know, it's been the most important thing in my life, but I have to continually readjust to make sure, you know, that the joy and that's what happened with me with Zen, is that Zen doesn't necessarily lead to it, but if for me I made some missteps and it started to dry out my practice from what I was doing, so I switched over to bliss meditations. So, you know, I mean, we're talking about self-hypnosis, other things. You know, my favorite thing is probably, you know, doing bliss meditations. I think we can get so busy with tasks and life and what's next and this issue that, again, things can dry up a little. And it's, you know, so soaking in bliss, soaking in joy, soaking in, you know, the pool of joy can do wonders. And so meditation has a mind aspect to it, but luckily I do come from the Zen tradition, which doesn't focus on the mind that much as the act of sitting. And from there, I guess for me it was easy to pop over to bliss, which bliss is, believe me, is not a big word in Zen, to say the least. But so I just want to kind of throw a pitch in for, you know, if anyone thinks of meditation or how I do this, one of the best ways to approach it is just, so what would it be like to sit here and enjoy this thing? And maybe you start your meditation practice for the first few months just sitting and sketching, or sitting and reading a favorite book you have, and postpone the work on the mind. A lot of meditation teachers and practices push people into working on their mind, I think, way too quickly. And so, you know, I think, you know, the best introduction to a meditation practice would be, you know, sitting and, you know, watching trees, sitting watching, you know, reruns of Friends, sitting and letting the body find a place that it wants to be. And then you can get to work on your mind. But if I was to throw out one word of caution after a number of years doing this is, you know, if you're thinking of it and the first thing you start doing is trying to count your breaths or, you know, be mindful or something like that, you know, I think you'll end up with more failures than successes, as opposed to if you sit there and say, God, this feels kind of good. I like sitting here. So that's my meditation pitch.
Thanks. Yeah, one of my own meditation teachers who's Tibetan, he says, you know, don't sit on the cushion if you're angry, grumpy. Go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Go have some noodles.
Yeah.
Go hug someone, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the Tibetan Vajrayana traditions, which are very embodied, you know, we do walking meditation mm-hmm. and mantra meditation. And you know, there's the Dalai Lama says, I think, you know, that there's many different forms of meditation because there's many different kinds of people. So mm-hmm. definitely, you know, maybe what works for your friend might not work for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there looking to begin meditating, you know, experiment and see what feels good, but don't, you know, sit rigidly on a mm-hmm. cushion. I'm supposed to do this, because there's many other ways.
There are so many ways. It's like sports. I mean, you know, Vipassana, Zen to Qigong, sitting meditation. I mean, they're so distinctly different.
Right. If you love to run and someone said, well, here, why don't you go play baseball?
Right.
You know, how would that feel? Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's very true. Yes.
Awesome.
I'm curious about the work you do at the
Columbia Reentry.
Sorry. Maybe I was meditating just for a second. But I'm curious about, like, the kind of, you know, you're the director of Columbia Reentry, mm-hmm. but yet you have personal practice mm-hmm. and clients and so this kind of double,
yeah.
how do they connect and intersect and interact? And
well, sometimes it's a challenge, tell you the truth. They're too, you know, it's funny that you mm-hmm. you said that, which is, I was so happy we all met and talked beforehand, because before this I was at work writing a grant using a different sort of mindset, very practical, mm-hmm. what goes here, no change that, you know, decision-making mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the working with clients and trance state mind is a different one. So I tend to go through phases where I'm focusing more in one area mm-hmm. and the back to the other. And so I wish I could say, oh, they go together. It's so nice to have a break, but it's a challenge. Now, I think the bridge for me, again, is meditation practice. Meditation practice works to bridge both of those sides, but the practical grant writing side and the trance mind are two different minds.
Right.
And you know, can I shift gear instantly? That's pretty hard, but as much as so I do a lot of internal work, but I do it because it's like an internal sport or an art.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I do it a lot for the joy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the work I do around Reentry Columbia, I mean, I've done my whole life. I started Covenant House decades ago, which works with runaway young men and women. And I've just been social service oriented my whole life. Mm-hmm. And professionally, that's where I get the deepest satisfaction. You know, seeing social justice work and seeing changes in systems and how people are treated and things like that.
Mm.
And at Reentry Columbia, what we do is that we work with men and women coming out of mostly the county jail, but also state prisons and federal facilities. And we do our best to help them facilitate their transition, which is rather dramatic for them. Especially if someone's been in a state prison but even the county jail. I mean, you're out of the loop for a while and then mm-hmm. boom, you're back in. Where are you working? Where are you living? How are you getting someplace?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what sparks my work there. The absolute craziness that we would expect someone to go from sitting inside a jail to coming out and having no money, no transportation, no work, and but make sure you do, you know, everything nice and smooth. I mean, we're, right. you know, I always think of all, you know, myself and friends and people I know who have lots and lots of resources who, you know, most people I know are challenged on a fairly regular basis with our resources.
Right.
So the idea that people come out of incarceration who have way less resources and yet are supposed to just kind of fix things up.
Right.
So I guess I guess that's what's driven me more in terms of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Trying to deal with that.
And how long have you been there?
Our reentry just, only 8 months. I went in to volunteer and then things happened. And I ended up becoming executive director. The executive director there had wanted to move on, do some of her own other work, related work, who had started it. They did, you know, Carolyn Policarpus and Lynn Rothenberg did a great job of mm-hmm. starting Reentry Columbia up. I had worked in New York State prisons before. I'd done a little work out at Rikers. And while I was in California, I used to do a good amount of work in substance abuse treatment and some of the county jails and stuff. So I was very familiar with the area and had always had strong feelings about how this could be more functional. And you know, it's just, we've been very fortunate here. There's been a lot of support from county folks, county officials, you know, the captain of the jail, you know, allowing us to go in a couple months and start programs there, and other folks here just saying, no, this is good work. And what I've liked to see so far, what I have seen is, what I mean to say, is it's just across the political spectrum in terms of people being becoming very aware that there's a better way to have this system operating. The way we have criminal justice operating right now isn't working. And it's not working financially and from a humanitarian point. And so how can we all fix it? And that's why I think you do have a pretty wide range mm-hmm. of support.
And what are some of the programs that you're interested in bringing in?
Well, what we'd like to do is have certain sort of, there'll be four tracks, hopefully. Again, we haven't started this yet, so this is what we're planning on, four different tracks or like Monday night programs. One would focus a lot of educational aspects around substance use and abuse and the challenges there and how do drugs operate on the brain, how do we make changes related to that. Another would work around employment issues. I mean, it's very challenging in Columbia County, so it would just be support for resume writing, interviewing, very practical based. But the other track would be creative expression, the power of creativity and the enjoyment mm-hmm. and joy of creativity and enriching people's lives, their hearts, their, you know, happiness of being part of something. You know, so, you know, keeping that creative part of life alive. And then the last one is, again, more practical on self-management skills around anger and stuff. Carolyn Policarpus, our program director, has worked for many years in AVP, Alternatives to Violence program in the state prisons, and she's going to bring a lot of that knowledge and work and sort of modify it for a jail setting. So we want to do a whole range. But again, I have to, you know, tell you, I mean, part of it is because really good support. We haven't had to fight too hard for things because there seems to be a lot of awareness.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
What kinds of techniques and counseling for the substance abuse? Are you using any self-hypnosis techniques or any other?
I wouldn't do that here. I mean, it's kind of a joke. And again, it might be a West East Coast thing. In the mm-hmm. West Coast, it was more of I could actually go into the schools and do self-hypnosis. I mm-hmm. doubt there, you know. So here, no. I'm actually a big fan of education. I mm-hmm. think people underestimate. They jump sometimes too quickly to skills and behavior change, mm-hmm. funny enough, because I work in that area. But people underestimate the power of knowledge and how much. So when I was working in the state prisons, A lot of the inmates really were empowered learning details around neurotransmitter theory and how the brain operates, how it makes adjustments, which drugs, you know, increase receptor sites, which ones decrease it. And so I'm a big fan of empowering through knowledge, and people become, again, I'm going to use the word empowered in terms of how things operate, and then can make changes. So over the last decade or two, we've jumped a lot to skills and everything, which, again, I train on and do a lot around. But so a lot of the substance abuse stuff we'll do is education and feedback, which is, what do they want to learn? What do they want to see?
That's great. We just have a few more minutes, so maybe should we ask, are there any resources or references you would direct listeners to?
You know,
anything
that
we've talked about.
Right, yeah. I'm, you know, since I'm not that acquainted with the area yet, I'd be hesitant to. What I would say is, if you're interested in this, you know, I think we all do searches the same way, right? You know, we all know how to search on the web. We all know how to read reviews. We all know how to do word of mouth. And that's what I would do is, is I would work... if someone says, oh, that person's, you know, really good, you know, but, you know, I mean, I don't like them that much, but they're really good at what they do, I wouldn't work with them, you know, which is if you are doing behavior change work, trance work, hypnosis work, you gotta, it's gotta be with people you feel good about and trust, because, you know, going into a trance, you're basically saying, okay, all right, I'm going to kind of, you know, put my head back here and relax. So what, I guess what I'm saying is, in terms of resources, do it the same way. Who knows? We buy tires and everything. I'm quite serious, which is, you know, which is, you know, I wouldn't just look a place up and say, oh, well, they have a nice website. I would, you know, then go check on another website that talks about them, and then go read some reviews and that talks about them. And then, you know, go call up some of your friends who work in the area and say, do you know this person? And then, you know, I mean, you know, go look up their Facebook page and find out if, you know, you like what they write on their Facebook page, and then find out where they went to school, and then track down their family. No, I think I'm getting carried away. But what I'm saying is what we do, which is I would learn about it. Yeah.
Any books or websites? Is there a national guild of the type of hypnotherapy?
There are definitely, I mean, you want, if it's hypnosis, there's hypnosis certification. I mean, they can be connected to national programs, but I can't even remember which one mine was because it was so long ago. But it was okay. You know, I checked it out and it was, you know, legit and certified and stuff. And to tell you the truth, you know, the books, it's been a while for me. And the same thing with automatic writing, which is too bad. There isn't a lot out there. Yeah. So I wish I could be better on the resource side, but
well, you'll just have to keep us posted when you're going to do workshops up here.
Yeah.
Maybe it's...
Well, I have my own written stuff on automatic writing and self-hypnosis and everything, but that's all been in, you know, sort of my inside. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So if I, you know, now I'm getting more excited about the idea. So maybe this fall I do an automatic or self-hypnosis workshop and then, you know, just hand out material.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say that we didn't ask you about?
Not that I can think of. Lots of good questions. Thank you both. This was very, as we talked about, very fast how quickly an hour goes. See, just we're in a talking trance, and all of a sudden it's over.
Well, folks, if any listeners out there have any questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook. And we could always forward those along to you, Scott, if folks have any questions.
Absolutely.
And our just to remind folks, our next show will be, it's the fourth Monday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. So our next show will be Monday, September 22nd.
Wow.
I know. but thank you so much
Thanks
for coming
so much.
On the show.
Wow, it was
and
wonderful.
This was super informative. I didn't know much about this, but now I'm very intrigued.
Thanks so
Excellent.
Much.
Thank
and
you.
And listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in a month.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Okay. Take
Bye.
Care.